The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
You were affiliated with Al-Qaeda just 11 months ago. You were designated by the U.S. government a foreign terrorist. You were actually on the wanted list. Times have obviously changed. Now you're playing basketball with military leaders here in Washington. You're meeting with President Trump. What has changed in the U.S.-Syria relationship? And then equally importantly, sir, what has changed about you in that time?
We talked about the future, the present and the past, and so we talked about lifting the sanctions, and we and there is there was a decision at the United Nations at the Security Council to lift the sanctions on myself and other people as well.
Has President Trump raised with you, discussed with you, your own past affiliation with Al-Qaeda terrorism?
I think this is a matter of the past. Now, we did not discuss this actively. We talked about the present and the future. We talked about the investment opportunities in the future in Syria, and so that Syria is no longer looked at as a security threat. It is now looked at as a geopolitical ally and some a place where the United States can have a great influence. Investments, especially extracting gas.
We talked about the future. That's the president of Syria right there, whose name seems to change depending on which article I read. In any event, he was in the White House with President Trump talking about the future. The future, as we heard yesterday on the show, we just need to make sure that the terrorist past doesn't dominate the peacemaking future. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this show at our website, thetrumpet.com, or at the Rumble channel. Just go to rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. A lot to get to on today's show. On Veterans Day, or Remembrance Day, if you're from Britain and Canada, some of the Commonwealth nations, just the timing to me. Here we are honoring our veterans, and you've got this Al-Qaeda terrorist with American blood on his hands, and he's in the White House. I mean, not today, but yesterday, right in the lead into Veterans Day. This is from a Reuters piece. Speaking to reporters, Trump praised Sharaw as a strong leader and voiced confidence in him. We'll do everything we can to make Syria successful, said Trump. But President Trump also gave a nod to Sharaw's controversial past. And this is a quote from President Trump. We've all had rough pasts. We've all had a rough past. And it's exactly that. I mean, it's in the past. Focus on the future. Just don't let that terrorist past get in the way of future peacemaking deals. I'm going to quote an article a little bit later by my father. It's back in 2003 at the website. And he spoke in that article about how that we're, it's like we're spellbound by peace agreements. And no matter how many failures there are in our history, and there have been a lot, we just keep aiming to get someone to sign the sheet of paper. It doesn't matter about their past. It doesn't matter how much terrorism or how many terrorist acts they've carried out. It's really mind-boggling to watch this. And to see him, I mean, what a scene. He's getting into, I think it was when he was leaving the White House. And there's all these Shiraz supporters, evidently in D.C., that are giving him like a hero's welcome. This man was radicalized in the early 2000s because America was going out and trying to defend itself following 9/11. He was asked about 9/11, by the way. Listen to this response from Fox News, clip two.
Do you, Mr. President, have regrets that Al-Qaeda carried out those attacks that killed 3,000 Americans?
I was only 19 years old, so I was a very young person, and it didn't have any decision-making power at that time, and I don't have anything to do with it, and Al-Qaeda was not present right then in my area. So you're speaking to the wrong person about this subject. We mourn for every civilian that got killed, and we know that people suffer from the war, especially civilians who pay the price, a hefty price for the war.
It's very, very cagey, the response. Very general as well. Do you have regrets that Al-Qaeda carried out that massacre on 9/11? Well, hey, I was only 19 at the time. I mean, you're asking the wrong guy. I really didn't have that much decision-making power. He was stirred and inspired by that attack. And he took to the battlefield in 2003 when America went on the offensive. America had him in prison for years and then let him out, and he went back to the battlefield fighting Americans. I mean, to just invite him into the White House the day before Veterans Day at that. This is from a website, The Conversation. It says here, Abu Muhammad al-Ghulani. So that was his name until it went back, I guess, to his birth name. He may become the face of post-Assad Syria, but who is he, and why does he have a $10 million U.S. bounty on his head? Why does he have a $10 million U.S. bounty? You heard the Fox reporters say, just right up until 11 months ago, he was on the terrorist watch list. It says, Ghulani was born Ahmed al-Shara in 1982 in Saudi Arabia. He spent his early years in Damascus, Syria, after his family returned from Saudi Arabia in 89. His jihadist career began in Iraq, where he joined fighters aligned with Al-Qaeda after the 2003 U.S.-led invasion. But, you know, we mourn the loss of any civilians. And, of course, what he's saying there is lots of civilians were killed in Iraq as well, thanks to America, thanks to Uncle Sam. It's even kind of stunning to watch Fox News give him a platform. So you've got the hero's welcome outside the White House. You've got the meeting inside the White House where President Trump says he's got a lot of confidence and that he's a strong leader, Shira. And that, well, we've all had a troubled past. We've all had a rough past. Are we being spellbound by peacemaking deals once again? It's something to think about on this Remembrance Day. Look at Adolf Hitler. Look at how many peacemakers lined up to try to get Hitler to sign the dotted line so that we could finally have peace. Are we making the same mistake? This article says in 2011, under the direction of Iraqi militant and then Al-Qaeda in Iraq leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, it says Ghulani was tasked with establishing the Nusra Front in Syria. The group quickly became a formidable force within the Syrian civil war. It was under Ghulani's leadership that Hayat al-Sham sought to portray itself. That's his group, his terrorist group. It sought to portray itself as pragmatic, less focused on global jihad, and more on governance issues in the region of Idlib, Syria's largest rebel stronghold. So now he's pragmatic. Now he's a peacemaker. Now he just wants good quality governance in Syria. He wants credibility abroad. He wants legitimacy. So, as Melanie Phillips said some months ago, I didn't even bring her article, but it goes down all of the just the horrific atrocities that this man's guilty of, even recently in his own country of Syria. But as she said, you know, once you put on a nice suit and trim the beard, well, then you're received with a hero's welcome. There's a lot of things about that scene yesterday that are troubling. Just like in the UK, as I covered last week, I mean, you see how we've talked so much about the communist infiltration over the past many decades. What about the Islamist infiltration? You look at pockets of the United States, and it's not that far removed from Birmingham, England. They don't want Jews there because the Islamists have basically taken control of the streets. And they've got support from the British authorities telling the Jews, stay away, you better stay away. Is this the pathway to peace? Is this how you make peace in the Middle East or anywhere? Listen again to the exchange that Shara had on Fox News, clip 3.
Mr. President, the White House has said that President Trump would like Syria to join the Abraham Accords. The foundational principle of the Accords is that Israel has the right to exist as a sovereign Jewish state. Is that something that you agree with?
I believe that the situation in Syria is different from this situation of the countries who went on with the Abrahamic agreement. Syria has borders with Israel, and Israel occupies the Golan Heights since 1967. We are not going to enter into a negotiation directly right now. Maybe the United States administration with the President Trump will help us reach this kind of negotiation.
Here again, another cagey response. This was yesterday. You know, do you want to be a part of the Abraham Accords and recognize Israel's right to exist, Israel's right to statehood? And he said, well, you know, it's a little different for Syria because Syria borders Israel. It borders the Golan Heights. Listen to this from the Daily News Egypt. It says, born Ahmad Hussein al-Shir in Riyadh, al-Golani spent his early childhood in the kingdom before his family moved to Damascus, Syria, when he was 7. His family's origins trace back to the Golan Heights, currently occupied by Israel. I mean, they see it as occupied territory. So, yeah, that's another way of saying, no, I don't accept Israel's right to exist, at least according to the current boundaries. And I think I'm being pretty generous with the latitude that we're giving Shara. He dresses up nicely. He trims the beard. But what about the fruits? What about the history? Well, like Pompeo said yesterday, I mean, we just have to make sure the history doesn't dominate the future. And then the deal's done. And then peace spreads. Golani's radicalization began during his time at Damascus University. So when he was a young man, you know, and now he's, what, in his mid-40s? Damascus University. He regularly attended sermons delivered by this Muhammad guy at the Al-Ala bin Haradi Mosque in Aleppo, known for its anti-American rhetoric. It's not just anti-Jew, anti-American rhetoric, especially following the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq. I mean, you see some similar storylines. Israel, the little nation, Israel had its 9/11 2 years ago, and then it responds, and then they become the bad guy. And then America had its 9/11, you know, 25 years ago. And then America responds, and of course, America's the bad guy. America's the aggressor. That's the way they think. This is what radicalized him. It all goes back to 9/11. It goes back to the sermons that he was hearing at Damascus, even before that. And then 9/11 happens, and I mean, that galvanizes the radical Islamist camp. And then America is the great Satan for trying to defend itself. Does all this sound familiar? I mean, we're seeing it play out again. Israel goes on a counteroffensive to try to crush Hamas. And what are they made to do in recent weeks? Well, you make peace with Hamas. Shake hands with Hamas. This commitment led to Iraq approximately 2 weeks before, well, it just goes down through the history of this man's life. And then yesterday, he's outside the White House and crowds of supporters for Shara. They're out there cheering him on. This is the article that I mentioned. Actually, it's not. It's from 2020. The older one is a little bit later in my notes. But my father says here, the truth is nobody can bring peace in a family or nation apart from God. God must be involved if you're to have real peace. I gave you this quote, I think, a couple weeks ago. But it says these leaders seem to have more faith in their enemies than God. How much faith do we have in the all-powerful God? How insulted must God be when men trust somebody like the top terrorist in the Middle East rather than trusting him? What does God think about this? What must God think when we reach out to terrorists, when we reach out to enemies in an effort to make peace? This is what President Trump said. I think this is seven months ago in an interview with Laura Ingraham, clip four.
In the readout, it also stated that both sides want to get to an improved bilateral relationship, the United States and Russia.
That's true.
How can we trust that Vladimir Putin actually wants that and that he's not also being influenced at the same time by his close friend, President Xi of China?
Well, look, we have our own discussions with President Xi of China, and he wants to get along also, and he's looking to get along, and we're looking to get along with him, and we will. I think that President Xi would like to get along, and I think Russia wants to get along with the United States.
Xi, Putin, Shara, Hamas, Qatar, they all just want to get along. Now, again, you can't necessarily question the good intentions in the case of President Trump. I mean, he does desire peace. But in the more recent interview he did yesterday with Laura Ingraham, he talked about how that, you know, he wants war to stop. And if war has to happen, he says, we'll get in there quickly and take care of it powerfully and then get out of there and put an end to it and stop it. I mean, he's basically telecasting his strategy. He will do everything possible through negotiation to prevent war. And then if war has to come, it's going to be an absolute get in, smash, get out quick, just like with Iran over the summer. So, I mean, the enemies, they know. They know what to expect. That's really alarming to watch as well, just how open this administration is with its strategy for making peace, or even its strategy for war. Do they really want to make peace? President Xi, what did he say there? He says they're looking to get along. They're looking to get along. They're trying to get along with us and with others, Putin and Xi. And now here comes Shara, invited into the White House. Listen to clip six. This is from his interview with Laura Ingraham yesterday.
A new detailed report on CNN, of all places, documents China's expansion of most of 60% of its missile facilities. It's staggering, bigger than anyone had ever thought, more robust growth. And over the weekend, the new Japanese prime minister, who I know you like a lot, Kaichi, called the Taiwan situation extremely severe in its phase, and that they may consider any move on Taiwan by China to be a national survival crisis for Japan. Now, that gets better, a Chinese diplomat today said in a social media post that Xi, the prime minister of Japan, should be beheaded for her comments. These are not our friends, sir, are they, in China?
Well, a lot of our allies aren't our friends either. Our allies took advantage of us on trade more than China did. And China took big advantage. I mean, we built,
we built their military.
We built their military. We built their whole thing. The whole thing was, and by the way, if you remember, in my first term, I took in hundreds of billions of tariffs. I put tariffs on China very early. Then when we got hit with COVID, we fought that. We did a very good job, but that was COVID. It came from a certain place in China.
Right. You remember? Another great gift from China.
It was another little gift we got. But look, I get along great with President Xi. I get along great with China. But the only way you're going to get along well with China is you have to deal from a position of strength. We have tremendous strength because of tariffs. We have tremendous strength because of what I've done. I've rebuilt our military, and they have a lot of missiles, but we have a lot of missiles, too. And they don't want to mess around with us, I can tell you that.
This, again, I've made this point before, but in the same interview where he talks a lot about ending 8 wars in the past 9 months, where he talks a lot about making peace, signing peace agreements, he's told by the interviewer, listen, the world is arming for war. China's not our friend, are they? And he says, well, look, allies are not our friends. What? That's how you respond to this? Look, there's allies that are worse than China. And by the way, I get along with Xi. We're friends. Are we spellbound by peacemaking deals? That's the way my father put it 22 years ago. I think it was a 2003 article. We had one posted today, by the way, on here on Veterans Day, Remembrance Day. Abraham Blondeau, he says, remembering the legacy of man. What is man's legacy? He talks about the poppy pin. They wear that more in the UK than they do here, but he talks about how it was instituted by Americans and British. How did the world react to the tragedy? And that came out of World War I. The remembrance. You know, we've got to create these memorials. We can never forget. And then what happened? What happened like 20 years later? Well, we had World War II. How did the world react to the tragedy of World War II? It says it created the United Nations, an attempt at a world government to stop all future wars. The world vowed never again after the horrors of the Holocaust. The traditions of remembrance started after World War I now include the sacrifices of World War II. That we just expanded the remembrance and the memorials to include World War II now because the wars didn't stop. It says it now includes Korea, Vietnam, and the numerous other conflicts that continue. What is wrong with mankind? What's wrong with us? Why can't we make peace? Why can't we solve these problems? Well, if you watch this program regularly, you know the answer to that. And if we have time, we'll get into that. It says, no matter how much we desire peace and seek to remember the sacrifices of war, we sink deeper and deeper into violence. And further on, it says, we experience suffering and war because we do not remember God. You see, on this day of remembrance, we've actually forgotten God. It's good to be reminded that we've forgotten God. How about a God Remembrance Day? How about remembering God? He told ancient Israel, look, I'll fight your battles for you. You don't need to go to war. But Israel chose war. And we've been relying on armies and military might ever since. We have forgotten God. We haven't remembered God. This was, I believe, last week. I didn't have time to get to these clips, but it's President Trump hosting these Central Asian leaders at the White House and talking about peace and the Abraham Accords and so on. This was at the presser, I believe, clip 10.
And on this topic, Kazakhstan already has diplomatic relations with Israel. Can you talk about the significance of this agreement in terms of what it would signal to the region as Gaza moves toward rebuilding?
Essentially, we've really expanded the Abraham Accords. And one of the reasons is we are right now in negotiations or talks with many countries that really wanted to come in, but they couldn't because of the status of Iran. When Iran had a possibility of nuclear weapons, which they do not have now, when Iran was the bully of the Middle East, let's call it the bully of the Middle East, which it isn't anymore, they had a hard time going against that. I understand that. Now that Iran has been very much decimated in terms of their nuclear and in terms of their regular, because of the actions we took with those beautiful B-2 bombers and other things, people really want to come in.
So the Abraham Accords are expanding. Peace is spreading. Iran's no longer a bully. Shiraz no longer a terrorist. Play clip 11.
Do you have an update on how soon that international stability force may be on the ground in Gaza?
Very soon. It's going to be very soon. And Gaza's working out very well. And you haven't been hearing too much about problems. And I'll tell you, we've had countries that have volunteered. If there's a problem with Hamas, as an example, or a problem with anything, but they volunteered to, on a single basis, go in and take care of it. We're very powerful countries in this coalition, but so far it seems to be working out very well. But that's a very small part of what we're talking about. That's a part of Gaza. You're going to have a very, I think we can say, Marco, we have a very strong peace. This is a strong peace. We have many countries involved in the Middle East. Essentially, these countries are all involved. They want to see peace in the Middle East. And Marco, what would you say about that?
No, I think that's right, Mr. President. And you deserve a tremendous amount of credit for making that possible.
The peace is strong. We have strong peace, says President Trump. Listen to the rest of this article. This is posted at the website, thetrumpet.com. Joel Hilliker referred to it in the morning brief, remembering the legacy of man. And it says, the truth is the legacy of man is war. Again, you don't want to just make fun of people's intentions. They're out there trying to seek peace. But a more realistic view, just looking at history, man's legacy has been that of war. And my father mentions that in the 2003 article. He said, basically, we're not going to win the war against terrorism. This was right after 9/11. We had forgotten God. It says, it is the way of God that brings peace. The Bible warns us over and again that man cannot have peace unless he follows God's way of life. And Abraham Blondeau talks about that way of life in this article. Again, it's featured right now at thetrumpet.com. Make sure you read that today on this Remembrance Day. He gives several scriptures that you've heard often on this program. For they have healed the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. That's in Jeremiah 8 and verse 11. When the peacemakers are out there talking about how strong the peace movement is, how it's growing. Beware, 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 3 says, sudden destruction's coming. Here in Jeremiah 8, verse 15, it says, we looked for peace, but no good came, and for a time of health, and behold, trouble. It says, behold, their valiant ones shall cry without. The ambassadors of peace shall weep bitterly. That's Isaiah 33 and verse 7. And it says in the article, God warns us that when we hear our leaders declare peace, war comes quickly. Our history confirms these scriptures are true. This is really, when you talk about Remembrance Day, I mean, what is it that we should remember? It's fine to remember and to honor our dead, our war dead. But what about remembering the lessons of what led up to World War II? Of what we were waving in the air to cheering crowds, cheering for peace. But more important than that, are we remembering God? Are we looking to God? Are we looking into the Bible for answers to these most important questions? Here's a bit more from that Central Asian conference and the presser afterwards from last week, clip 12.
And frankly, Iran has been asking if the sanctions could be lifted. Iran has got very heavy U.S. sanctions, and it makes it really hard for them to do what they'd like to be able to do. And I'm open to hearing that, and we'll see what happens, but I would be open to it. But we did take the sanctions off Syria. in order to give them a fighting shot. And I think so far they're, I think he's doing a very good job so far.
That's in reference to the Syrian leader. And, you know, he's open to the same thing with Iran. I mean, Iran has a rough past, but don't we all? Everybody's had a rough past. So let's move on. And just don't let that terrorist past dominate the peacemaking future, to paraphrase Mike Pompeo. Don't let that interfere with a good deal. I mean, the past could be, well, it could be pretty ugly. It could be horrible, in fact. And you could be given a pass. Sanctions are lifted. Deal making is done. One more from that conference last week, clip 11, or sorry, 13.
Trump's doctrine on foreign policy is in particular relation to South and Central Asia and China.
Well, look, we had a tremendous meeting, as you know, with President Xi in China. And my doctrine would be denuclearization, because we have enough nuclear. We're number one, Russia's number two, China's number three, way behind, but they'll be even in 4 or 5 years. They're, you know, working overtime on nuclear weapons. I think that denuclearization would be a great thing. We could blow up the world 150 times. There's no need for this. So I really think we're going to have, I've spoken to President Putin about it. I've spoken to President Xi about it. And everybody would like to spend all of that money on other things, people that really, you know, things that can benefit people now. So I think something like that could happen, the denuclearization. It's really, I want peace. I want peace through strength, but we want peace all over the world, and we're very close to getting it.
We're close to getting peace, and he sees something like denuclearization as possible and has even talked to Putin and Xi about it. And these countries that want to have a good relationship with America, they want to spend the money they're spending on nukes and missiles and things on, you know, their countries, their people. Is that realistic? I mean, when God looks at this world, we taped a program just last week about how world peace will come. In fact, it's the last chapter of this wonderful book here, The Incredible Human Potential. World peace, how will it come? Are we prepared to look into the Bible to see what God says about world peace? It is coming, by the way. It will be here soon. But is it going to be through negotiation? Human beings negotiating with one another, talking about denuclearization, not talking about the terrorist past, not talking about the fruits of the past 20 years, but talking about the future. If you read and study the last chapter of The Incredible Human Potential, you see how world peace is coming. I mean, real peace. Not the kind of peace that human beings today just talk about. This was from the interview with Laura Ingraham yesterday, clip 5.
I want to get along with countries if possible. You know, people are shocked. Remember, Hillary Clinton said, we'll be in a war. I stopped 8 wars in the last 9 months. I don't want to be in wars. If I am in a war, we're going to win the thing fast and it'll be violent. But speaking, you know what? I don't want to be in wars.
We'll win the thing fast and it'll be violent. But he doesn't want to be in wars. He's stopped 8 wars in 9 months. The confidence of so many of these peacemakers, it's astounding. Particularly when you look at the world today, when you take an honest assessment at what's happening, wars in Africa in particular, the Middle East. I mean, I gave you those two JNS pieces yesterday. The two Hamas fighters that tried to sneak across into Israel again to do what? Well, I'm sure to kill Jews. They got killed before they could carry it out. But it's a strong peace. And it's spreading. I mean, the Abraham Accords are spreading. And we've stopped 8 wars. Peace, peace. This is that article from 2003. Listen to my father. He says here, Middle East peace treaties dominate the news. Sound familiar? Again, you get tomorrow's news today at thetrumpet.com. You can subscribe to our magazine, our print edition, and get 10 issues a year at no cost, no obligation. Just call our operators today. and request a free one-year subscription. You see the number there, 1-866-930-3024. But he says that peace treaties dominate the news. This was just a couple years after 9/11. This was as America was going into Iraq. I mean, all of this war and I don't remember the specifics, given that it's 22 years ago, but he says that, look, you have all this talk about peace treaties, and then there's so much war all around. It says, as all kinds of peace treaties did just before World War II began. So here again, this is history. This is what we need to remember. He says it's just another major sign that war is about to explode in the Middle East. Now, was he right? Is that the right forecast? Well, look at what happened since the Gaza withdrawal in 2005. I mean, since he wrote this in November 2003, you had the Gaza withdrawal, you had all the attacks on Israel after that. I mean, we could go right down the line until October 7, and then all the wars these past 2 years. Israel defending itself, decapitating Hezbollah, trying to crush Hamas, and then made to be the bad guy, the aggressor, killing all these civilians. Look at what the Jews are doing to people in Gaza, those poor, peace-loving people in Gaza. You know how the narrative goes. But he says here, being spellbound by peace treaties has kept the Western world from fully seeing and recognizing Iran's massive plot to control the Middle East. And then look at what's happened in the 22 years since. I mean, yes, Iran took a hit in that brief war this past summer. But look at how Iran was dominating. It was ascending. It was sponsoring worldwide terrorism. It was using its proxies to kill Jews. And yet, we're spellbound by peace treaties. It's a good way of putting it. He says that will never be stopped by a peace treaty. Only a superior power could ever stop this extreme Islamic movement. Only superior power can crush radical Islam. You look at the prophecy in Daniel 11 and you see how it's finally crushed. It's the king of the north, not America. The king of the north coming against the king of the south like a whirlwind. It's got the king of the south surrounded, but then it's got whirlwind force as well. Like a tsunami of power. Those weapons that every nation is building, creating, they're going to be used. And you can talk peace in one sentence, and in the very next sentence say peace through strength, and we've got the biggest military. Nobody wants to mess with us. Is that strong peace? Is that the pathway to peace? Or is it the opposite? My father said in that 2003 article, a basic understanding of human nature and history should tell us this. All the wishful thinking in the world won't stop that calamity, just as the pacifist dreamers of the 1930s didn't stop Adolf Hitler. And he says here, history is thundering for us to awaken. History is crying out, saying, wake up. You're trying failed policies. They've failed time and time again. It says we can't negotiate a victory. Only superior power and the will to use it can win. That's the only way to stop state-sponsored terrorism. That's a great article, full of some big statements. We can't negotiate a victory. And yet, that's what we're trying to do right now. And anyone is invited. If you want to put on a suit and trim your beard and show up at the White House, come on in. We'll see what we can do. Anyone. No one is ruled out. Paul said in 2 Timothy 3 that in the last days we'd be coming into perilous and dangerous times. That's God's assessment. It's an evil world. And my father says that just a basic understanding of human nature should show us the true intentions of some of these hardened terrorists with blood on their hands. He shows up in D.C., and instead of being put into prison, he's given a hero's welcome by the cheering crowds. Sharah, the one who was radicalized at Damascus University, and then following 9/11, the one that took to the battlefield in 2003. And now he's a special guest. It's pretty shocking to see it play out as it did yesterday. When we come back, we'll revisit this Tucker Carlson story, some of the things he said recently with Megyn Kelly, and that article. I touched on it last week, remembering the legacy. Sorry, that's a different article, the one I just read. But this article that compares Tucker Carlson, or points out some of the similarities to Zamdani, the one that just won the mayoral election in New York last week. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Prosperity, government, trade, technology, stability, freedom. The last two centuries have been the exception in human history. How did we get here? The 19th century was dominated by an empire that exported civility, order, standards, and opened the doors for global trade. It ended slavery and implemented a system of governance that protected people's rights. And then in the 20th century, a new power came to dominate. Remarkably, one that would continue in the same traditions as its predecessor. For 200 years, the United States and Britain dominated the world stage. How did these two nations rise to prominence so suddenly? And why are their legacies so relentlessly attacked today? The astonishing truth is that your Bible prophesied the rise of Britain and the United States. It also prophesied their fall. The biblical identity of these two nations is the vital key that unlocks Bible prophecy. This lost master key to prophecy is revealed in Herbert W. Armstrong's most requested book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You must understand the biblical identities of these two nations to comprehend where we are in Bible prophecy today. To learn more about this vital truth, request your free copy of The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
Nick Fuentes has said a long list of very vile things.
Big time, including attacking my dad, which was the most vile of all, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I personally have watched videos of him questioning the Holocaust, likening it to baking cookies in the oven, and there's no way you could have gotten to 6 million, seems to be his theory. He seems to think that we've way overstated the number of Jews killed in the Holocaust. He's ripped on poor Usha Vance in the most offensive terms, which so what do you say to those people? Say, why didn't you raise any of that?
You know, do your own interview the way that you want to do it. You're not my editor. Buzz off. I mean, I don't know. You want to go yell at Nick Fuentes? I'll give you a cell. Call him and go sit and yell at him and feel virtuous or whatever. That's up to you. I got the same thing with Putin. Why aren't you yelling at him? Okay, why? So I can show that I'm a good person? I care about what my wife thinks, my children think, and God thinks, and that's it. I don't need to prove that I'm a good person to you. You may think I'm a terrible person. Okay, I'm just doing my thing, which is I want to understand what people think, and I'm committed to that, and if you don't like it, don't watch. That's my view. Yep. But that doesn't mean that I share the views. I'm not.
Doesn't care what anyone thinks. He answers to his family and to God. And well, we are. We're all going to have to answer to God when it's all said and done. We played that clip last week. But it's interesting. Even what he talked about coming out of Fuentes' mouth, his hatred for Jews, his love for Hitler, for Stalin. And Tucker says there that the most vile thing to come out of his mouth, in his opinion, is he attacked his dad, I guess. I don't even know what he said about Tucker's dad. But that's the worst. That's the worst thing he said. It just reminds me of what he said about the Christian Zionists. He dislikes those people more than anyone else. Christian Zionists. Whoever that might be. I think Tucker came out later and apologized for that. But still, I mean, you can tell a lot about an individual given how much they hate certain ones or dislike certain people. And then the ones they sit down and have a pleasant conversation with. I mean, really, when he's interviewed Putin, he's interviewed Fuentes. It's like I said in the first segment, no one's off limits. No one. You can sit down and talk to a terrorist. And good things will come from it. In that article we have at the website today, it says, we live in a paradox. As United States President Donald Trump and other world leaders proclaim confidently that peace is spreading around the world, anti-Semitism and violence are becoming mainstream in Western nations. The liberators of the concentration camps agree more with Nazi ideas today than those they fought for. What is wrong with our heart and nature? The liberators. That would be our nations who liberated those concentration camps. Now we agree more with the Nazi ideas. And that's what brought that British veteran, we played it last Friday on the show, to tears on TV, national TV in the UK. Is this what we fought for? To just hand over control of the streets of Birmingham to radical Islamists who hate Jews, who support Hamas? This is happening right in our own country. How does the Al-Qaeda terrorist show up on the street outside of the White House to throngs of cheering people? What does that say about America? And what's happened to this nation? That article by Jonathan Tobin about Tucker Carlson and Mamdani, it says more than a week after former Fox News host and current political commentator Tucker Carlson hosted neo-Nazi groiper Nick Fuentes on his podcast, the controversy he set off hasn't just had legs. It has created what seems like a schism on the right. You see the division in the MAGA movement. It says popular conservative podcasters like Megyn Kelly and Matt Walsh doubled down on their refusal to condemn Carlson's latest instance of promoting anti-Semitism or the even crazier stands of far-right political commentator Candace Owens. Walsh, I guess. I don't follow him too much. Megyn Kelly. They won't come out and criticize Tucker. You got to, again, the thinking of just sit down and have the dialogue. Anything goes. Anything can be said. We're just trying to understand. And if you don't like it, well, then turn it off and go try to get the interview yourself. I'll give you Fuentes' number. You can feel virtuous by criticizing him. How much more of this kind of reasoning can there be before, again, everything explodes in everyone's faces? Are we going to be saying, when that happens, are we going to be saying, if we just had one more podcast, if we just could have gotten one more interview to understand the jihadist? Carlson and his pals have a lot more in common with New York City Mayor-elect Mamdani than they do with the overwhelming majority of Republicans and conservatives. Shocking to watch. That was confirmed when Carlson's newsletter greeted the election of Democrat Socialist as the head of America's largest city. Well, he came out with his newsletter and said Mamdani's really not that bad of a guy, and, you know, they share a common interest. Israel needs to be isolated. Israel needs to be abandoned. Israel needs to be attacked. It says the similarly minded American conservative magazine published a piece the same day as Carlson's newsletter, also excusing Mamdani because they considered his obsession with destroying the Jewish state to be just fine. According to its convoluted reasoning, Israel's war against Islamists has nothing to do with the threat to America from the same groups because the Jews aren't really part of the West and ought to be cut loose by Washington. Like Carlson, the magazine is primarily interested in justifying anything and anyone who will break up the U.S.-Israel relationship. So again, putting all this together with the first segment, are we on the path to peace? Have we remembered God? Is God involved? The truth is that Carlson and others on the far right aren't really supporters of Trump's America First vision. Some characterize their views as America only, though that's a misnomer. It isn't, strictly speaking, isolationist so much as it is just obsessed with isolating Israel and the Jews. Strict isolationism. But the obsession is in isolating Israel, in isolating the Jews. He says Tucker's perfectly happy to embrace foreign nations like Vladimir Putin's Russia, Iran, or Qatar. It's just Israel and its Jewish and evangelical Christian supporters that get up his nose and cause him to label them heretics suffering from a brain virus. Here's more from Tucker's interview with Megyn Kelly, clip 15.
Why Israel? You're saying the focus?
Because
the
energy is over there. Yeah, I mean, look, Trump is elected. I campaigned for him and I love Trump. I just want to say that. And I talked to him the other day, and I love Trump. And I've known him for 25 years, and I mean, I could write many books on Trump, and they would be positive, basically. But the second he gets elected, who's the first person to visit? Bibi. Then he comes again. Then he comes again. And it's like the energy of the administration and of the entire U.S. government is all of a sudden about Iran. A war with Iran? Really? How many people do you know who've been killed by Iran in the United States in your lifetime? Zero, because that's the number. How many people do you know who've died of a drug OD? Some. Maybe you have a nephew who did. So, like, what is this? I know you want to have regime change in Iran. I'm not mad at Israel at all. I'm not actually mad at Israel. I'm mad at our leaders for spending their time and my money focusing on someone else's country. And then I'm doubly mad because that's a total betrayal of the promise, which is your government works for you because you own the government because it's a democratic republic. Like, what is going on? And then if you say anything about it, it's like, you're a Nazi, you're an anti-Semite. Well, actually, I'm not.
It's only Israel that, as Tobin says, gets up his nose and really bothers him. Who does he sit down first? President Trump sits with Bibi first. And then the war with Iran. Tobin says, for Mamdani, eradicating the Jewish state is the key to achieving the dismantling of worldwide imperialism and capitalism. For Carlson, isolating Israel and anathematizing its Jewish and Christian supporters as being guilty of dual loyalty will enable the United States to reach a Christian nationalist nirvana where no globalist forces can spread their malign influence. We'll get to a utopia, finally, if we can just sever this tie with those evil Jews. Such views ought to be relegated to the fever swamps of the far left and far right. But in the last 2 years, since the Hamas-led Palestinian Arab attack on Israel on October 7, 2023, they have gone mainstream. They've gone mainstream, and it's happening right in our own nations. He says in his article how popular, and you see it in Fuentes, who's in his late 20s, I think, how popular these messages are, this hostility, this hatred for Jews, how popular it is, particularly among young people. It says those who listen to the leaked tape of the Heritage Town Hall or have seen videos of questions asked at Turning Point USA events, asked at the University of Mississippi, of figures like Vice President Vance or Eric and Laura Trump, the virus of Jew hatred is spreading. You can see it. You can see it in these podcasts. You can see it in these interviews. You can see it in their public comments or not so public comments. It's ugly. It's hateful. It's violent. And it's spreading. That's something worth remembering on this Remembrance Day, this Veterans Day here in the United States. And that's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.